You walk in tired and hungry, one bad dinner away from losing it. You don't like to cook. You don't want more takeout. You just want something good. That's why there's Dish by Blue Apron. Pre-made meals with at least 20 grams of protein and no artificial flavors or colors, from fridge to fork in 5 minutes or less. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
The principle we're living by for me is at the end of each athlete's career at Villanova, the goal I want, you know, what I set forth to do is that they look back and they say, that was great. I'm glad I made the choice to come to Villanova. And so if they can look back in their career and go, hey, Josh, thank you. That was great. Then I've done that's what I'm hoping for.
And our guest this week is Josh Steinbach. He is the head women's volleyball coach at Villanova University, coming up on two decades at the helm of the Wildcats. And Josh, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for dating me the first thing off the bat, making me feel old. I appreciate it.
We're all there.
Yeah.
So as we are recording this late May, what is focus for you and the program right now? Or is this about as quiet a time as you get?
Yeah, it is about as quiet a time as it gets. May is a reset month mainly for us. You know, we had some portal work early in the month and trying to get after that a little bit, but mainly trying to reset and then get back after recruiting in June, some camp stuff. And then we'll be on the road, a decent amount of my staff and I on and off throughout June, summer camps in July and season prep. So our team will report August 6th and start practice August 7th for the fall season.
Mentioned portal. Is the transfer portal as big a factor of life in women's college volleyball as we hear in basketball and football?
Yeah, I mean, it's very active and there's a lot of things going on. I think there are, you know, certain spaces you can be in and take really good advantage of the portal and certain spaces you can't. I think, you know, in our world where we are at, you know, I don't know, the, you know, somewhere, I think at our best we've been in the 40s RPI and our worst we've been in the 200s, right? So like somewhere in the, like hopefully around in the 50 to 100 range is where we are. And at our academic status, it can be a challenge to be super active in that portal. The upper echelon is, you know, there's a lot more movement and there's money flying around and those things. But you know, right now at Villanova, it's pretty tame for us. But we've got some grad kids that we've done well with, and that's kind of been the space where we've been most active and had the best success.
Kind of building off that, has life changed as a coach as much the last 5-6 years for you and for the sport of women's volleyball as it has in other sports like football and basketball, where you talk to coaches and the way they approach recruiting, the way they approach building a roster has completely changed from what it was, you know, 5-10 years ago?
It's a really good question. And I think you're going to get different answers from all kinds of different coaches in all kinds of different spaces, right? For me personally, yeah, it's changed a little bit, right? Like we can, if we have an open scholarship and we think about that as a really valuable thing to offer and we want to be more selective about it, there's this backup plan that always is, well, look, we don't want to spend – 4 years of scholarship money on a student athlete when we know that if we don't, you know, just to fill a spot that we might have where we can, hey, let's wait till spring and see what happens. Because if we have money in the spring portal, then we can bring somebody in the spring and then have them for, you know, there's always this backup plan that is this better, that feels better than I think it used to, as far as not stressing me out. At the same time, there's always this piece of, I got to make sure my best athletes feel good about what they're doing here. I think that's always been part of the crux of what we've done. We always want our athletes to feel like they're having a good experience. So that maybe hasn't changed that much. So for me, it hasn't been overwhelmingly like I'm not stressed out about the world writ large and athletics from a day-to-day basis. I think there's this overarching thing going on with house settlement coming and the unknowing of what's happening in college sports in general. That's a little stressful. But other than that, you know, I'm still trying to focus on what I can focus on and worry about the things I can worry about, coach my team, treat my kids really well, have a good, you know, I still love being in the gym every day and coaching matches. I love going out recruiting. I like being out. Hey, I'm paying me to coach volleyball for crying out loud. I'm, you know, the line I use over and over again is I could be an accountant. So I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing.
From a recruiting standpoint, where are the hotbeds? Like when you're putting your itinerary together of trying to find the next group. What are the places you absolutely have to be?
Yeah, the nice thing about our sport in recruiting is that we're not married to recruiting in high school. Actually, as a matter of fact, the opposite. I'm not going very many high school matches or whatever else. So the club world, if you were in basketball, it's the AAU world. But for us, it's not quite AAU. It's a USA. But those systems are set up with tournaments that are pretty national in scope. So, you know, if we go to a tournament in Kansas City, which is a tournament we go to every year on President's Day weekend in February, we're going to see kids from Florida. We're going to see kids from the Pacific Northwest, from Southern California, from Texas, from all over the Midwest. And so those tournaments tend to draw from all over the country. There's a big event in Philadelphia, actually, a Northeast qualifier that happens usually within a week or two of Easter. And we see a bunch of kids from all over the country come into that. So while, yes, there are some, hey, Texas has got – Texas athletics is just crazy. They're absolutely volleyball nuts there. And we can go – we want to get down there every year. And Southern California is a really important recruiting bed for us. The level of reputation of Villanova academically has always drawn really good interest from Southern California. So those places I need to get to every year, more and more of the Midwest is becoming having Villanova interest, which I think early in my career wasn't the case. So we're getting out to Chicago and Indiana and making sure we see kids from those spaces. But Villanova's got national name recognition thanks to a number of factors. But basketball, of course, is a big one. And just academically, I think. So we got to pay attention to everywhere. Our best player on our roster right now is from Ellensburg, Washington. And I don't think that would have been ever a place I would have been like, oh, yeah, we're going to go to Central Washington State for a kid. But, you know, that's just how it kind of works out.
When putting together a roster, are there positions or a position that are the most difficult to fill?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in any sport, right, there's physical attributes for kids that you are hoping to get to. And the most physical kids that play highest above the net, whether it's because they're, you know, because they're 6'3 to 6'6 and touching, you know, 10'3, 10'4, 10'6, whatever the height is above the net, those kids are rare commodities and, you know, no matter what position they're playing. So, I'm sorry, I've lost track of your question as I was talking there, but I think, you know, you're saying what's the hardest position to recruit, and, you know, it can be middle blockers for us, but it could also be really skilled and physical outside hitters. It sort of depends on the thing. And so, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, trying to find our sweet spot of the kids that we can get that help us compete with the best teams in the Big East is always a challenge. And some years we feel like, hey, we were doing really well in the middle. We've got really good pieces there. Sometimes it can be really, really hard.
You're a fall sport as far as competition.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to put a season to bed? Now, you play your last match whenever that is, and then I'm sure there are exit interviews with the kids and stuff like that. How long does it take you till, you know, like 2024, okay, that was what it was. We learned from it. We're going to build off it, and we move forward. Or is that all? Or is it an ongoing thing?
Yeah, it's never. I mean, it's never ending. I mean, I will. There are a couple of matches out there from, you know, years gone by that will never ever leave the world of my brain, and so that's a hard. You know, that's coach's world, right? Like, I don't know too many of my friends that are, you know, that I talk to on a regular basis. they're coaching Division One, Division Two, Division Three volleyball. They're saying, you know, they're like, oh, that freaking match when this blah blah blah, you know, whatever the thing was that happened. And I will never forget a point that happened in our match against Dayton in 2015. And you know, it just like there are certain things that you'll spin over and over again. But generally speaking, you know, once we report in the next semester in that spring when we start with our new group, we try and look at it and like, this is, hey, here we go. Let's whatever's happened is prologue. Let's get going with this new group and try and learn from those things. And we preach to our kids, our team every single day. This is a learning environment. You know, we're a high end academic university with really smart people around us. So, you know, we want to be great learners, and that's part of my job too. I got to model that behavior, right? So I'm trying to be a great learner and change with the times and not be stuck in the same mode every day. So so hopefully when we report back in January and we start with our individuals and usually a little after Martin Luther King weekend, we're looking forward and we're looking to the next season.
As someone who is not overly familiar with the intricacies of volleyball,
yeah.
How much impact do you feel the head coaching position, you as a head coach, can have on a match? Or is most of your impact getting ready for that match and game day, match day, whatever happens, it's really for the most part up to the kids? Or do you feel like there's a certain amount you can move the needle in a good way?
Wow. This question you just asked me has been one of the philosophical questions I have been muddling over for the past couple of years and really playing with. And I think the way, you know, there's a guy named Rob Patrick who was a coach at Tennessee a number of years ago who when I was first got the job, he's like, your job is to recruit, and that's, you know, where you can have the most impact to success on your career. And then you got to manage your team. And that's the second most important thing. And I think that was, I don't even know Rob that well. I don't know why that one stuck with me. But those two things really are the basics of what we're doing. And like, hey, once you have the players for your team, that's the biggest impact, right? Talent level drives, in my opinion, how everybody succeeds in sports across the board. And then organizing your team is more of a generally, I think, is try not to mess it up, right? Like, hey, can we do no harm? I think in some things that we can do with setting matchups, volleyball is interesting because once a matchup gets set for one of our sets, right? So we're playing best of five, and any one of those sets, once the matchups are set, you're stuck in those for that entire set, and you can't make changes like you might be able to do in a football game where you can, hey, we're going to switch corners side to side because of they're doing this, or in basketball, we're going to have our, you know, our big guard this guy because we can't do that once the set gets going, right? Unless we make some substitutions, and those are a little more rare. So I think there's some impact in those things. I think there's some impact, you know, as far as pre-match. And then there's some impact on, hey, what our scouting report does. But I'm going to guess in a set to 25 where the average number of points scored might be 40, right, between the two teams, or 45, whatever, I'm sorry, 45, I don't know. There's one or two points that we're tweaking there. And so in close matches, they're incredibly valuable, those little coach points. And so we're trying to be laser focused on how can we, as a coach, what can I do to make a 1 or 2 point impact per set as we prep for a match in the week? And then we're trying to make sure we do a good job of letting our kids improve in the best way we think they can, so that from the time we report in August till the time we play our first match, whatever that point value that that I'm worth, we're getting the most out of it. I don't know how many points that is per set. That's not a measurable that you can actually measure. I wish it was. But that's our goal. Our goal is to do the best job with that time and treat it as valuable time. And in a way, it's this kind of, you know, interesting thing where I'm trying to be self-important, even though I know it's probably more about Abby Harrell and Campbell McKinnon and, you know, Liz Nelson doing their job than it is me doing mine. But I'm trying just to stay out of their way and create a great environment where they're going to feel good, feel confident, feel rested, feel, you know, that they're ready to play, and give them the best opportunity to show what they do.
You talk about once the group is set for the set that you can't maneuver around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, from a coaching standpoint, how often does it happen that you get a little bit into it and you're like, son of a, like something jumps out like, oh God, and we got to live with that now for the next 25 minutes?
Yeah.
Or the other way, like, oh man, yes, it's exactly, we've got exactly what we would want here.
Yeah.
How often does that happen? And what is that like from a coaching standpoint to see that, and when it's bad, not be able to do anything about it, and when it's good, want it to ride it as long as you can?
Yeah, it happens all the time. It happens all the time, both ways. Very common if you're a matchup coach. And it's interesting. I've been a matchup coach my whole career until this past season. And this past season, we started in the same rotation all year long. I think I flipped it one time to try and get something, and I didn't get what I wanted. So I was just like, all right, never mind. And the reason was, you know, you can have different decision-making things. I wanted my best rotations on the floor first. And so we started in what I thought were my best rotations first all year long. In the past, I've been, you know, I don't know why I went to that this year. I mean, I know why, but I think it's one of those things that you have to make decisions about early in the year. And last year we said, hey, look, we're going to be best with this one thing happening. We want to do that as much as we can. In previous years, I mean, I would spin the wheel or spin the dial all the time. And that's one of the most fun things in coaching. Like, you look down across the other side of the bench, and then they show up on the court, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe, you know, they spun too, you know, or hey, we spun to get this matchup. Especially after the first or second set, right? You win a set, and then they try and spin to match up, and then the next set comes out, and you're like, well, what are they going to do this one? And it's just, that's a really fun coaching thing. I don't know how much impact it actually has on what happens in the games, but it's really fun to play. It's a fun game to play, and it can get in your head too. Like, I mean, I've gotten bent out of shape because we mismanaged, spinning the dial at some point in time, but it's still fun.
So now let's dig into your backstory. What's your on-ramp to volleyball?
Oh, being a bad baseball player, I think. You know, I was a baseball geek my whole, I mean, you know, preteen, teenage life, and I get to be a freshman in high school, and it got too fast. I couldn't, you know, my hands weren't fast enough to swing the bat and get around, and anybody that threw it was throwing hard enough. So if you didn't throw me a curveball, then I just couldn't keep up. And I got cut, and I was crushed. And I am a freshman in high school, and a bunch of my, you know, friends are thrown together an IM volleyball team, and I'm playing State College High School. And my high school volleyball coach, who was a chemistry teacher at State High, Todd McPherson, grabs me out of that and says, hey, you should come try out for volleyball. I guess it was my sophomore year, right? And he says, you come try out. And I didn't know anything about anything, but that's what it did. So a year later, after my junior year, I got the bug, and I had it bad. And all of a sudden, I was going to camps and playing wherever I could play. I tried to walk on at George Mason University, not having ever played anything but high school season and some, you know, couple little, you know, messing around teams. I used to go up to the intramural building at Penn State and play with the men's club guys up there. And then I get to George Mason and realize I wasn't any good. You know, and I was an okay player. I wasn't there yet. I just hadn't had that experience. And, you know, they kept me for an extended tryout in the fall and then cut me. And I ended up dropping out of school and not knowing what to do, really. And I moved down to beach areas with a friend of mine who was one of my high school teammates. And we started playing beach. And I was like, okay, here we go. Now this is what I'm going to play. And I'm going to be a good beach player. And there was at that time, there was a semi-pro tour on the East Coast that was sponsored by Molson. And I was going to play on that Molson tour. And I was like, so excited. But I had to wait till I turned 21 to play on it. It was all these beer tours. You had to be 21. And so I was playing a bunch of beach a couple summers. And then that thing shuts down. And I'm like, all right, I'm moving to California. And I got a friend of mine. And we got in a car and drove to Southern California in what year was that? 92, 93. And ended up in San Diego. While I'm there, I found a beach partner and started playing, and he dragged me off and asked me to play junior college. And I played indoor junior college at San Diego Mesa College and got my associate's degree there and played and had a great experience and made lifelong friends there. And while I'm there, I got dragged into coaching at the club level. And then I was fortunate enough to stumble into a cadre of people that are brilliant coaches. And Todd Maddox, who's the coach at the Bishop School, which is a private school in La Jolla, and is become one of my best friends and lifelong mentors, drags me out and gets me coaching. And so I did that. And then I'm at club and I start coaching at Sun West Volleyball Club. And I got married. I had a kid. And then I'm coaching. And Russ Rose is out to see one of the kids on my team. So, you know, Russ from Penn State flies out to San Diego, is coming to my practice to watch a setter that I've got on my team. And we have dinner. And he says, hey, why don't you come back and finish school and volunteer with, you know, with Penn State women's program. And that time. That was, they had just won a national championship in 99, their first one. So that sounded like a pretty good deal. My then wife, who's now my ex, was obsessed with getting out of Southern California and getting back to central Pennsylvania where her family was from. So we did it. So I got in, finished up 2 years there with Russ, and it was, Russ is a pretty bright guy and an incredibly loyal guy and a really good volleyball coach, and I learned a lot there. And not only that, but I had somebody on my resume that will fight for me forever and ever and still does. And so Russ has just, been a fantastic person for me to, latch onto. And so I've now got, these three or four people, Ojan Barenbegi, who's a coach at Coast Volleyball Club in San Diego, was my beach partner that dragged me out to play junior college, and is a brilliant coach. And Todd Maddox, like I said, I still do stuff with, is a brilliant coach. And Russ is a brilliant coach. And I have these people to mentor me in this coaching career. And it's just been, I've just been really, really lucky, and with these people who are really, really thoughtful, really, really intelligent. And a good job at Cincinnati, and a couple of years assistant there, a couple of years assistant at Wright State. I was fortunate enough that when I was job hunting after that, the Villanova job opens. The guy who'd been here previous to me, I knew. Russ makes a call. I get an interview. And luckily enough, the other people I think that were interviewing for the job pulled out, so they were stuck with me. And I've been here for a long time now.
That is a very interesting road.
Yeah.
Was there a point? Like, was the decision made in your head, I'm going to coach volleyball and that is going to be my life's work? Or
no.
Is it just opportunity? What's next? How does this work out? And then you kind of look around and go, okay, I'm a college volleyball coach.
There are a couple of factors right there, right? Like, hey, I'm an assistant. I'm a JV coach and an assistant varsity coach. And I'm coaching club, and I fall into running this club, right? Like, basically, they needed a full-time person, so I get this job. And I decided to go back to San Diego State to start taking some classes. I need a degree. And along those way, lines, there's just different people you bump into. And, this guy, Brian Hosfeld, who was at the time the head coach at Baylor, was watching my team at a tournament, goes, hey, would you ever want to coach college? And I didn't have a college degree, and I said, I'll have this degree, and it was pretty much a prerequisite. And he goes, all right, well, let me know if that ever happens. And, I haven't talked to Brian. That was maybe a 20-minute conversation in 1998 or 99, and all of a sudden that's in my head, and I now know Brian in a different capacity. But, man, that was just put that bug in my ear. And Russ coming out, and I had dinner with Russ and a guy named Jim Coleman, who's a legend in volleyball coaching theory and whatever else, and he put it in my ear, and I was like, hey, that's something I could do. But my plan was to coach, teach English and coach high school. I was going to finish at San Diego State and stay out there, and would have been a very different path. But yeah, I kind of fell into it, and my ex-wife was really instrumental in it. She was really, I think, all the things we say about our exes, but she was really instrumental in saying, hey, you're good at this, and you've got an opportunity and you should pursue it. And, I am incredibly thankful for her for that. And so that's, been a really, there's a bunch of things that just kind of fall in place there.
I want to put a pin in that and come back to your coaching. As an aside, you mentioned the beach experience. How much beach volleyball, indoor volleyball, different skill sets? I mean, obviously the concept of the game is the same, but like if someone's really good at beach, does that guarantee they're going to be good indoor or vice versa? Or is it completely?
Yeah. I mean, you answered your question as you asked it, right? Like, hey, you have some similar skills, right? So you've got to be able to do some of these things. It's funny. And we go, circling back, we'll see kids in the transfer portal who are playing sand somewhere and want to come play indoor. And it scares me to death because I don't think they have the skill set that's ready to go to walk in and be good in the indoor game. But if you're an indoor player and you're playing some beach on the side, I think it enhances your game. I think if you're a beach player and you're playing some indoor game, that enhances your game, but it's not necessarily a direct correlation. What's really good about beach players is they've got to be much more all-around skilled, whereas it's a much more specific game indoors, right? Like, yeah, I mean, the comparison always to me is in basketball, right? You have a point guard, but you could move them to the two, right? And they could play, and they'll be fine. I can't take my setters and have them receive serve. I mean, like, it's like worlds apart. They just won't have any feel for those things, and so we can't do that. But on the beach, yeah, you could play right, you could play left. It doesn't. They move around all the time. Those things are much different, and so there's some crossovers, but it's very different.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Josh Steinbach in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One on One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Meet the next generation of vehicles. Check out the Honda Prologue, Accord Hybrid, or Civic Hybrid. For a limited time, you can get 0.99% APR on a 2025 Prologue, a 2.99% APR on a 2025 Accord Hybrid, or a 4.99% APR on a 2025 Civic Hybrid. Contact your local Honda dealer today. Offers applicable only to well-qualified buyers. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Josh Steinbach, head women's volleyball coach at Villanova University.
So now getting back to your coaching journey, when you talk about your ex-wife said, you're good at this, when along the road, was there a point when you started to feel like you had, I don't want to say your arms completely around it because it's always evolving and all that, but where along the point did you start to think like, I can do this. I am doing things. I am bringing in people that are moving the needle, that are giving me an advantage. I understand how to attack weaknesses and stuff like that. Like, how was there a point, one of your stops where you just felt your confidence in the job you were doing really took a giant step forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the things I always say I value in people is their ability to be self-aware and know themselves. And I don't think I was very early in my career. I thought I was, you know, my ex-wife says that to me and somebody else says, hey, you've got a good feel for, you know, another club coach I worked with said, hey, you've got a good feel for communicating with people. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I got this, you know. And I think if you ask Russ what I was like when I was with him, he'd be like, that guy, right? Like, you know, he was like, hey, that guy wore me out. Because I remember going home and complaining about Russ, you know, like, oh, that guy doesn't, what's he, he's doing this thing. But, you know, just because I was just so full, I was like, I didn't understand. I didn't have a good, clear vision of the picture. I just thought what I knew was the right stuff. And I didn't understand how big a picture some of the things are that you got to work through. And, you know, Russ's brilliance is that it never affected him. And he was always just like, he's like, oh yeah, you think you want to, you know, this kid doesn't do this well. Yeah. Okay. Just take them over there on that court and you guys go work it out, work on this thing with them. And he was fine. He gave me autonomy to go fail with stuff that I thought was a big deal. And I would come and write something on the whiteboard for him and, hey, listen, we should organize rotations this way. And he'd look at it and he would give me the time. Like, what was great about it is I was a volunteer with him and he would give me the space to kind of fail with stuff and go, this is great, except for you have this major problem here. And he's like, I don't want anything that's got major problems. I'm like, but you can work around. He's like, I don't want to have to work around. And it all made sense, right? Like, and so now looking back on those things, I'm like, I thought I knew it then. Now I'm like, I didn't know bupkis about anything, you know, back then. And so that's a hard question for me because I feel like I think I know less now than I think I knew. Like I know less now, right? And back then, I thought I knew everything. And at 30 years old, I just didn't understand. And at 53, I think the wisdom of yourself is that you know you don't know everything. And so I think I'm going through a coaching renaissance right now. I'm loving being in the gym and trying to learn and do different things. And I feel like right now I'm having a moment where I'm changing a bunch of things over the past couple of years that are all of a sudden feeling really good about what we're doing in the gym and how we're coaching. And I'm on a podcast all the time and I'm listening and I'm talking to other coaches in a way now that I don't think I was embracing at the same level back then.
You mentioned the stops you made and you come to Villanova. When you take over as a head coach at a Division I program,
yep,
kind of going along with felt you know everything and don't know. What is it like those first few months, that first year, when you're responsible for everything? Like, was it overwhelming?
Yeah, a little bit.
How much did you not know what you didn't know? Stuff like that.
Well, the good thing for me was I had been in some programs, you know, when I was at Wright State for a couple of years and I was at Cincinnati for a couple of years, and I was given a lot to do in those programs. I mean, you know, I was fortunate as an assistant that I ran the budget at Wright State. So I understood how some things worked. I was given 100% recruiting. You know, I was in charge of telling everybody what to do recruiting at Wright State. So I ran a lot there. And when I was at Cincinnati, I was given one of my 2 years there. I was, you know, Reed Sunahara, also a good mentor and good friend, was, you know, allowed me to run the gym for one of those years pretty freely. So I gotten some really good experience things. I think what happens is when you become head coach, and I, you know, one of the things I love doing is help mentor younger coaches. And I tell them is, you know, the hardest thing is to not lose yourself and still be the same kind of person, right? Like if you go from being assistant to being the head coach and you think you need to become authoritarian and dictator or whatever else, then you can lose yourself pretty quickly. And So the only thing I think I did right was I kept my sense of humor and kept things light, and I still related to players pretty well and kept it – tried to keep it fun for them when I got that job. But I was a little overwhelmed at times. There was a lot to do, and at that time, Villanova didn't fund volleyball very well. Like, you know, I know why I got that job. You know, it was a low-profile position with – you know, I had part-time assistants, and, you know, my first assistant – was in graduate school, and my second one was working at Starbucks in the morning, you know, to be able to pay the bills. So we were just scrapping by with whatever we could get. And so I think it was really fun in that environment, because the pressure was low and we were just kind of figuring stuff out. I thought those first couple of years were really fun for me.
From the standpoint, and I don't know how much, because I always ask coaches when they take over, when they move from assistant to head coach within a program, I think there is a significant change in the dynamic of you with the kids.
Yeah.
A lot of times the assistant is more the shoulder,
yep,
whereas the head coach is the one that's got to tell somebody the hard truths and,
yep,
stuff like that. How good were you at that when you took over Villanova? It's a little different because you're coming in as a new face. You're not,
yeah,
there's not a previous relationship you have to adjust. But just from your standpoint, being the person that has to tell someone, I don't think you're right for this, or you're, yep, not playing here anymore. Like, how tough was that?
I mean, those are decisions that, like, the biggest difference in that job is, right, hey, I got to sit down with you and say, hey, ex-recruit, hey, no, we've decided not to offer you, and that's hard. And or, hey, no, you're not going to start this weekend. And, you know, those things are hard. So, yeah, those were the challenge. I mean, for sure, those were the big challenges, right? And having to, you know, own those decisions. Even the little decisions, when to call a timeout, that's on you now, right? And you're exactly right. When you move over that one seat, all of a sudden those decisions, those things are on you. And being able to own those decisions and the repercussions of those things is the biggest difference. So I don't know if I was good at it, but I felt comfortable in being able to maintain myself and how I talked to athletes at that level than what I was before. You know, I feel like what I was good at in my skill set was that I didn't lose myself and have to think I needed to be above the fray. I could still sit there and have a conversation with an athlete and relate to what they were doing in daily life and, hey, how are you doing? What's going on? And so I think that was – I mean, you know, from my own perspective anyway, I mean, I was able to manage some of that. And that's one of the things I think I've done well over the years.
And how much do you think your journey – where you weren't a star player and you moved around and, you know, you go across country to try, yeah, stuff. How much do you think that helps in those conversations? Because I would imagine you have maybe empathy for things,
yeah,
that a lot of other coaches who maybe came up and were an elite player or a very, yeah, good player then coach, not quite maybe the understanding of what this decision can mean and stuff like that. I would think there's a lot more, hey, I get it, ooh, but we, yeah, got to do X, Y, Z.
Well, yeah, there's two things in there. One, I think it hits me emotionally much more, you know, when I got to turn to a kid and say, hey, look, I know that this is the role you want to have, but that's not the role you're going to have. I feel it too, you know, and because I remember what that was like. I mean, I still, you know, those things still sting, right? When you think you could go do this and you can't. And I still look down the bench at my team and go, man, I know those guys down there want to be in, you know, and I feel that. I think that empathy, you know, is something that is a blessing and a curse, right? Like sometimes I need to not be worried about that. And it's, you know, I need to worry about the six kids that are on the court competing in the moment. But I think it also allows me to be good with the rest of my team. And sometimes I'm good at it and sometimes I'm not. I mean, I'm sure my team will tell you, I can tell you that, you know, the past 5 or 6 years, I'm sure there's some kids on those teams that are going, Josh, you're full of it right now. You're not good at that. Like, you know, but we're trying to be, and we're, you know, that's the goal, is to try and be good with those kids and have empathy for when we're not giving them the roles they want. It's really hard. It's never easy, and it's not easy to manage it and get it right. You know,
you've had a lot of success at Villanova. I think the 2015 team's probably the high water. That's the NCAA tournament,
yeah,
team.
Yeah.
If I'm talking to you going into that season, was that a season of high expectations, or was that a group that outkicked the coverage of what you thought was possible?
I think it was interesting. That team, we had had a group of were they were coming into that year that were going to be seniors. Emma Pettit, Gabby Pethakoukas, Lauren Carpenter, and a couple others I'm sure I'm going to leave out that they're going to be upset with me. But they, you know, had been starters for their whole career. Specifically, Gabby Pethakoukas is a kid that had been sick. She had was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma during her career, her sophomore year, I think, and had come back and was finally healthy. And then we bring in a freshman middle from Southern California, Amanda Peterson-Henry, and we get a transfer from Pepperdine, Allie Loitz. And those two kids, the two new kids, injected some competitive energy along with these kids that had been around that knew the ropes. And I remember talking to our setter, Emma Pettit, on the first day of practice, and she was smiling. And I she was a very focused, determined, perfectionist, I mean, just brilliant kid, brilliant writer. Dad's a legendary coach, so she's got all this stuff. And I'm like, Emma, what's going on? She goes, this season's going to be fun. And I just remember that day going, hey, we got a good chance to be pretty good. And we opened at Penn State that year, and we get a set off Penn State. We didn't win the match, but we get a set. I think we win the second set. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was the third. But we win a set in that match, and Russ said, hey, that team's pretty good. And we would start and end our season at Penn State that year, if my memory serves me well. And at my age, that might not be the case. And I think we did a couple really cool things that year with that group that were fun. But, I mean, man, they just played hard and they were competitive. And Amanda and Allie brought a competitive energy that we hadn't had in a while at Villanova. And those two kids just were fiery. And then the skill set that Emma and Lauren and Gabby had on the court, along with, you know, the other pieces of that team, made it really special.
Do you feel like you appreciated that season in real time? Because a lot of times I think as a coach, you're just so worried about who's coming up, how are we going to do this, that it can be over in a blink of an eye and you don't maybe have that chance to like, you know, she said, this season's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Were you able to bask in that? Or is that something that when it's over, you look back and go, wow.
What I'm loving about this interview right now is that you're hitting on all these deep philosophical questions that I have in my life and coaching, right? And one of them is can we celebrate the moments we have instead of just being relieved that we didn't lose, right? And I've said to friends over the years that, if I start just being relieved, a win comes as a relief instead of in trying to celebrate the joy. If I have that every match this season, I got to find something else. And I'm still enjoying winning, and I'm still enjoying just enjoying competing, right? So in that season, I think there were some times when I became stressed. We went to Denver for a tournament. I had two Colorado kids on my team, Emma Pettit and Lauren Carpenter, and we didn't play particularly well. And we get upset by Texas Arlington, I think, and we lose to Denver. And man, all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, we're not what we thought we were. We're in trouble. And we come home and we got to go play Lehigh on the road on Tuesday. We changed some things we were doing. And I just remember celebrating that night at Lehigh, you know, which is not a big win for us. They were just okay. And I said to our team, I said something along the lines of, this has got to be fun. We got to celebrate this win. This is us getting back to what we think we can be. And I don't remember what I said, what my message was exactly, but I remember leaving that locker room at Lehigh going, hey, this is going to be good again. And so I don't know if I was basking in the moments, but I remember loving that team and loving all of the things that we could do. And hey, the little things we could get right or wrong. I mean, we'd beat Creighton at home in that, and we don't beat Creighton very often in our league. They've been the powerhouse in our league since they've been in it. And we beat Creighton at home, and I remember celebrating that one for a long time. Like, hey, that was I have a big grin on my face. And so I think I enjoyed it, but, you know, now I enjoy it now. I talked to kids on that team, and I still, you know, we can talk about that year a bunch, and it was really fun. And I saw Allie Fitzgerald, who was a Libro on that team, at coaches convention this year, and just, you know, hey, how much, you know, just those are the kids. I will always have great memories because that team was so much fun.
How often are you surprised either with what a kid does? And I don't mean like a specific skill set, but I'm sure you look as you bring kids in and in your mind, you're like, all right, best case scenario, this kid's probably X and we'll plug in here. How often are you surprised or with a matchup? You look at a team you're playing and you're like, I don't know, this is going to be tough for us. Yeah. And you win, and maybe you win easier than you think. Like, how often does that happen? Or are you to the point in your career, not that anyone's ever, what's going to happen, but, you know, do you feel like you get surprised a lot?
I would say I get surprised more by the former than the latter. I think college athletics is hard. And I don't think you, as an athlete, My guess is, and I haven't had to do, I didn't get to do it at the Division I level quite like these kids do, where they're playing club, they're playing at high levels, they're getting recruited, they've got a bunch of options, and then all of a sudden they show up on campus and they're like, whoa, everybody's good, this is different. That experience has got to be, it's got to be tough. I mean, like anytime you change levels at a drastic level, I think it's hard. So there's some kids that surprise us from year to year, and we think we're getting somebody who's going to be able to do X, Y, Z, and then they get in the college environment and they can't, and that's frustrating for them, and it's frustrating for me, and you know, it's hard. And we have the opposite. You know, we have some kids where we think, hey, they'll be all right and whatever else, and then they come in and then, oh no, they're very good, they're very skilled, the game's slowed down for them somehow. And I think that happens almost every year at some level. I don't know what how big that those jumps are up or down, but those happen all the time. Going into a match, I think we watch enough now. We watch enough video. We don't know what we're getting every night. We talk a lot about variances, and any opponent you play has got a variance, right? No matter who, Eagles, Cowboys this weekend, and hey, if the Eagles play well, they're going to, you know, whatever else. But you never know, because there's a variance in the level of things. And there's a guy that I have done a podcast recently with, named Edward Falios, and he's out at University of Colorado, and we were talking about some of these things, and his line, which I thought was really good, I use all the time, is your team is not a slot machine you pull to see where they're going to fall in that variance, but they're every individual person is their own slot machine, and you're pulling the thing to see what level they're going to play at any given night. And so, you know, as a coach, we're managing all of these different things where we don't know the variances of each player. And so, yeah, you're going to get some nights. You know, I've had some teams where I come in and they come in and we expect that we're going to do well, and then they just play really, really poorly. And I'm like, man, this is a lot easier than we thought. Or we've gone in and gotten some opportunities against some teams that maybe we didn't think we were going to get the same opportunities against. You know, I thought, like, you know, our last match of the last season, you know, against Marquette, and they knocked us out in the Big East tournament in the semis. And I think we thought we were going to have more opportunities than we did. They had a kid out hurt who was a big part of what they do, and they were holding on to it for the next night, and I think with good reason. But we didn't get those opportunities. So they didn't show up. We didn't execute at the level we needed to in order to get there. And I thought Marquette did a really good job, and they played at the upper level of their abilities. And so, you know, those things happen, and that's part of sport. That's why it's great.
How much do you think, in volleyball specifically, luck plays a role in success? Because I think it's one of the things I think in a lot of sports, especially like baseball, all this talk, we do all this breaking stuff down, and so often it comes down to a ball that falls in between two guys because you couldn't throw it in there any better. Or in football, yeah, hours, days of breaking stuff down, and it comes down to a punt that hits off a guy's foot who wasn't looking because he was trying to block somebody. Like, in volleyball, do you feel like luck plays an outsized role? And how hard is it as a coach whose idea is controlling the controllables? Is it enraging to have something decided by luck?
Enraging is a strong word. it's what we sign up for, right? Like, look, you know, you should be in coaching. You know, controlling the controllables is the most cliche thing we say, right? It's like, hey, that's all we can do, because, you know, the ball that comes off with a little bit of spin and catches the outside finger of a blocker and, you know, the line judge doesn't pick it up, and then you go to replay and then it shows up and you're like, man, that was a micro touch of a little thing that changes, you know, that changes the outcome of a set. Is that luck? I don't know. Is it, but those things, yeah, heck yeah. You know, for us, you know, you can recover out of the net. So a ball goes into the net and you can pull it out. Sometimes it'll hit the bottom wire and all of a sudden fall, and then it'll hit just above the bottom wire and stay in play. And those things, you know, and all of a sudden you can make a play and then the ball's alive again and you're back at it. But those are the things we can't, you know, calculate for, so we don't, you know, and I'm sure that every coach in their world says, oh, we just got lucky, we don't get lucky in those things. But we want to put ourselves in positions where the luck is part of the deal, and we understand that that's going to happen. And if we're at, you know, we played two matches in the Big East tournament this past year, and you know, we beat UConn in five, a team that we had lost to twice during the regular season and not played particularly well against. And in the fifth set at match point, a really good player makes a really bad decision for UConn, and she just gaffs it. And, you know, we're up 15-14. I don't know what the final was, something like that. But, like, and she just set something that she didn't call, and she set a ball to nobody. And we're fortunate. We celebrate. Is that luck on our end? Of course. It was hey, we didn't do anything to earn that point, but we celebrated like we want, you know. But I think those things are things that are going to come into play, you know. That punter is going to sometime – or that punt returner sometimes going to move his foot and it won't hit him. And that's the way the ball bounces. So that's part of the enjoyment of the sport from a fan's perspective. And from a coach's standpoint, yeah, it can get frustrating sometimes. But, you know, the perspective has got to be always that for every one of those that bounces my way, one's going to bounce the other way. And I'm trying to remind myself of that more often. The same way with officials, right? Like it's – I mean, I'm not good at – you know, nobody will tell – nobody who's watched me coach matches, especially my sport administrator, will tell you that I'm good at managing, you know, when things don't go awry from officiating standpoint. But – afterwards, it's built in. It's part of the thing. I can't fix, you know, we're going to get calls go one way or the other, and that's part of the deal. And sometimes we get calls and sometimes we don't.
Since you started coaching, does the definition of what you consider success, has that changed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I think when I was offered the job to coach somewhere, I was realizing my playing career wasn't what I wanted it to be, right? So, hey, now I can still compete, right? And that was what I... You know, I came for the competition, but what I've fallen in love with is the relationships, and whether they're with our athletes over time, you know, or with my friends in coaching, or with people at Villanova, or whomever it is at the end of the day, this is a relationship building business. And so, you know, I still want to win matches. I'm competitive, you know, I'm, you know, and sometimes to my own detriment, you know, like, but I think, you know, just like you said, at the end of the, you know, hey, when can you look back on a season and enjoy it or think about it, or how long are you, you know, worried about a lot? Like the principle we're living by for me is at the end of each athlete's career at Villanova, the goal I want, you know, what I set forth to do is that they look back and they say, that was great. I'm glad I made the choice to come to Villanova. And that encompasses a whole lot of things, right? That's the, you know, the hedgehog concept for me, which is, did they have a good career in that they got to play volleyball and enjoy it? Even if it was just in practice, could they enjoy it? Were they given the opportunities to do the things they wanted to do in the classroom, socially? Did they get a complete athlete experience? And so if they can look back in their career and go, hey, Josh, thank you, that was great, then I've done my – that's what I'm hoping for. Does that mean that we won, you know, a Big East championship? I mean, that might help, right? And we want to – you know, if we did some things differently and win some more matches, yeah, that helps. But I'm not foolish in thinking that I'm going to win a national championship Villanova volleyball. We're just not equipped for that. We don't have the history for it. But what we can do is we can give great experiences and try and win matches as much as we're given with the student athletes that we're in the market to recruit. And so we're really proud of what we've done. I'm really proud of what I've done in my career here. And I don't know that my record speaks to the amount of success that I feel like I've had.
Josh Steinbach, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Yeah, thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Villanova head women's volleyball coach Josh Steinbach for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him.
him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.